if we're truly going to get to the root of this issue, we can't keep just expecting it to be people who have the right experience.
Right.
It's all of us.
Right.
And it doesn't, you don't need to have that experience.
Exactly.
You just need to come with the right, you know, in the right heart space to do the work.
Here we are. Hey, anybody listening?
Hey, everybody.
Chris, who did you bring with you here today?
I brought Shelby Nauman with Tenfold. Tenfold is an organization in town that we've gotten a little closer to. One that I had a relationship with in the past because I was served by one of their predecessor organizations. And for that, I'm very grateful. But more recently, they opened a emergency shelter on a temporary basis right at the right time, right before we were opening the shelter here in the basement. And so it was perfect timing and a bit of a miracle, which I want to talk about later. But let's get to Shelby.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Could you tell us a little bit about Tenfold? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I'm Shelby Nauman. I'm CEO of Tenfold. Just to give listeners sort of a brief background, Tenfold is the result of two longtime organizations coming together formally in 2021. So Tabor Community Services had been around since 1968.
And Tabor was the one that helped me.
Yes. Yep. Yes. And Lancaster Housing Opportunity Partnership, or LHOP, had been around since 1994. Their signature program was really the first time home buyer program, fair housing, things like that. And we merged together in 2021 to become Tenfold. All the programs continued. We actually were not duplicating services and programs. We were really complementing each other, at times sending clients back and forth. You know, they would go to then Tabor for credit counseling and get their credit score up in preparation to buy a house, and they'd send them back to us. So the vision for Tenfold is really like to impact the community in a much deeper way by having these services all together, and we can work together as a team to really, you know, benefit the clients. So it's been great. We also have a shelter called TLC that's been around actually since the 80s. But came under Tabor in 2004. So that's a transitional shelter.
Where is that?
105 East King Street.
I've replaced flooring there.
Really?
I just remembered that.
Yes.
And one of my close friends had a heart attack the same day. That's the only reason I remember that.
Former hotel.
Yeah, that's the one.
Used to, last known as the King Douglas Hotel, but then in the late 80s, a group of Presbyterian churches came together because there were a lot of folks being released from state hospitals who needed extra support. Mm-hmm. So the beauty of that being an old hotel is that we have single rooms with bathrooms. So it's called what's called single room occupancy. So we can keep families together. They don't have to separate because of, you know, in a congregant shelter with separate bathrooms and things like that, you might have to separate. But we can keep families together, and we have 52 rooms there. Yeah, that's one of the other programs I think we're most known for. And then the SOE program, which is your neighborhood.
Yeah.
That was part of Lancaster Housing Opportunity Partnership as well. And that was really, 7 years ago at this point, you know, the southwest part of the city was kind of an area of the city that hadn't seen a lot of investment. In the northeast, you have Lancaster General. South East has always been rich with a lot of community service organizations doing great things. Northwest has F&M.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of great things happening there. So LHOP had led an effort to pursue funding, Wells Fargo Regional Foundation funding, which is really significant to be able to create a neighborhood-driven planning process that has been now implemented for the last 7 years. So, lots of great changes in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. So, when did you start at Tenfold?
That's a complicated question, but I'll simplify it by saying I went to LHOP in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then when we started to pursue what a partnership could look like in late 2019, and then 2020, LHOP actually moved in with Tabor as we were, you know, doing all the due diligence to figure out if we would become a combined organization, and then formally, like, we combined our boards and adopted new bylaws and all that. That happened in 2021. So I guess technically 2018. Okay. And before that, I was with Lancaster City Alliance prior to that, it was called James Street Improvement District for 14 years. And absolutely loved that neighborhood work. So I have a special place in my heart for SOWE, because I know how hard that work is. And yeah, it's great. So
where are you from?
I am from here.
Okay.
Yeah, born and raised in Strasburg. Went to Lampeter Strasburg High School.
Sorry about that.
Went to Westchester University.
That's better.
Not far away from, from Lancaster. Never left. I just have deep roots here and love this community. So been here for a long time.
Perfect.
There's nowhere else to go, really.
Why would I go anywhere else?
Yeah, this is the best place.
That's what I tell everybody.
And Andy and I have three daughters. So one in vet school in Philadelphia, another one who is 20 years old. She has special needs, and she's doing this immersion program with Willow Valley Communities that we hope will lead to some employment opportunities. She loves older adults, always has. And then a senior in high school who's still figuring it out. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's us.
All right. So, today, I wanted to talk about something you told me last week?
Yeah, last week already.
Yeah. So there's this low barrier emergency shelter that was opened temporarily at Tenfold. So listener background, there was no emergency shelter in Lancaster City for a period of time. And then the basement of Otterbein was identified as a place for a new one that would be built permanently. And so we, the church, entered into that. We signed the agreements. We opened up the space and construction began. So during that time, there was no low barrier emergency shelter available. And so folks just had nowhere to go. That was a very hot summer. I think folks in Lancaster City were very aware of the suffering that was happening and becoming more aware of the suffering that was happening, which I think actually is a good thing. I think that's a helpful thing. But that was the reality. And as the colder months are coming, the shelter, of course, is not done yet. It wasn't due until December, the end of December. And you folks decided that you would open up your space for this emergency shelter. I don't know the background of when that started or why. So can you fill us in a little bit about that? Because from my perspective, we're sitting here working on the details here. And we're like, ooh, how are we going to get this open? And, you know, what if we're a little late and it's getting cold? And then suddenly, boom, I get this notice that, hey, Tenfold just is going to open the shelter. So what was happening?
In a parking garage.
In the parking garage. Yeah.
So we have outreach workers who connect with people who are unhoused throughout Lancaster County. And they kind of came to us and said, and I don't remember what month it is, honestly, but they came to us after the what was the low barrier shelter had closed. At first, it wasn't terrible. Like, they were still able to find people. They were still able to work with people to get IDs and, you know, help them move forward with things. But then we started to see sort of some of the tightening of spaces. So the county put the fence around Binns Park.
Right.
I remember that. And that had been a common place for people because, you know, it was a public space, but it also had the overhang. So if it rained and things like that, at least all your stuff wasn't soaked. Then Yule Plaza kind of became an area that was experiencing some major crime issues and some major sanitation issues because everybody kind of was there. So then the city kind of had to crack down on that area. In addition to just like parks, curfews and things, you know, over the summer, there's a lot of families and people that want to be out in the parks
in
and those
spaces.
two were kind of in conflict. So people were essentially being pushed out to areas just outside the city and creating encampments that were not convenient or hard to find people. People were really the clients that were experiencing homelessness from being pushed around to different places were really starting to lose hope and yeah. motivation. So there, our outreach workers came to us and, you know, kind of expressed that to us. Mm-hmm. We went to the coalition, Office for the Coalition, and kind of said, hey, you know, what's going on? They had been in the midst of trying to find another temporary location. They looked at, I think, 21 different sites mm-hmm. to try to figure out if they could do something short term. And then at some point, they just said, we just got to focus on getting Clay Street open, which I totally understand. And I kind of said, well, you know, we have this parking garage. Could that be an option? They were supportive of us looking into it. And so we started just to kind of, you know, ask the city, like, what does it, you know, what would need to happen for it to meet code? Like, we just started kind of approaching it from just purely like the physical sense, you know, zoning, like all of those things. And one by one, everything was just lining up.
Just falling in the line. Yeah.
yeah. And so I went to my board of directors. So as a nonprofit, we have a board of directors, a governing board, and said, I have no money. Although I think that, you know, based on some of the conversations with partners, I think we could reach out to, you know, some larger donors and the community. I'm not sure how this is going to work because the TLC shelter is a completely different model than a low barrier shelter. Right. You know, risk could be somebody ODs in the bathroom. Risk could be somebody, you know, starts a fire in the space. There's a big fight. Like, you know, I went to them with a whole page of things that could go wrong with some things that we would do to mitigate, you know, those risks. And they said, yes, keep going. This aligns with our mission. We got to do this. Like, it's an immediate need that the community has identified. And this is why we exist. So you should move forward. And at that point, once I had my board's, you know, support, it was like, okay, guys, it's go time. Right. So I think within 3 weeks, we were able to open then on November 4th, which ended up being like unseasonably warm. And we were like, man, we rushed to get open and now it's like 75 degrees in November, but it was all good.
But gave them some time to settle in before it got cold.
Correct. Yeah.
So this process, from my perspective, I think I heard the announcement, maybe Justin said, hey, Justin Eby from the LCHRA, he said, hey, they're going to open. So at that same period of time, we were working out, so what does opening look like for us, having never operated a shelter? YMCA was new on the on the team. There weren't policies drafted quite yet. I think they had started hiring, but they didn't, you know, have them all hired. And so there was a lot of unknowns on our end. But the biggest unknown was the plan originally was to open it on Christmas Eve, which we thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. We're like, this is great. We're gonna have a worship service, invite folks that are coming to the shelter, feel free to come. We'll time it, you know, so that they're not worried about getting in. And then we realize that they may not make that date. And also they wouldn't open all the beds and it was already going to be cold. Mm-hmm. Like, they would need time to open all the beds.
Right.
And so that's when the announcement came. We're like, oh, that's perfect. It's perfect. Tenfold. We'll have this shelter open a little earlier. They can kind of get them off this rough living situation for a while so they can kind of get their bearings again, get in a stable place, make connections, get used to being back in a shelter again, and then that opens. So for me, that was I saw that as a miracle. I see that as a miracle that everything fell in at the exact right time.
Yeah,
that everything over here was still falling in place. You know,
yeah. I didn't even know about that till you spoke about it last week. Like, that you saw that as a miracle.
Oh, it definitely was.
Yeah.
Without a
doubt.
That
was really.
So, listener, we're talking about miracles today. and part of the reason I think it's good to talk about miracles from time to time is not just because I'm a pastor, but because we have a skewed understanding of what a miracle is. By we see miracles detailed in Scripture, and we think we know which ones were the miracles. You know, we talk about multiplying of fishes, right? Or healing of the paralytic in Luke 5. Or healing of a blind man, or healing of, you know, various healings. But in scripture, in the New Testament, as an example, there are multiple kinds of miracles, and not all of them are stated as such. They're like, it's amazing that the early church had to disperse, and they did, under persecution. And that resulted in the miracle of the movement just going all around the world. Mm-hmm. I see that as a miracle. It's in there. How did this little nascent movement survive, right? And they did, and they thrive. So I think it's good for us to talk about miracles. And you, after the little talk that I gave, came up to me and said, well, I've got a little sheet of miracles, of little miracles. Mm-hmm. So that's what I want. I want to hear these miracles. I want to hear, you know, what did you see happen?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the first one was that our building, if you're not familiar with it, 308 East King sits like catty-cornered. Is that a word that people understand? I don't know. I'm from Lancaster County. So
it's catty-cornered.
Like, yeah. My street.
Yeah.
On a weird angle.
Catty-cornered at Shippen and King. And then behind us is like a beautiful garage. Like, I don't want to understate by calling it a parking garage. It's beautiful. It has these windows in it. It was once Eastern Market. Like,
huge,
but we
tall
were using
ceilings.
It. Yes. Yeah. We were using it for parking. And, mm-hmm. you know, we actually park staffed in the Light Ministries just a block down mm-hmm. to reserve space for clients and things like that. But we were just using it for parking. So, but back in the day, it's that the main building has served as a lot of different things. At one point, it was like a boat dealership. No. So the garage itself is sprinklered, which was one of the key things that you needed to be able to have overnight shelter. Wow. The building, it's like our offices, not sprinklered, but the garage is. So in that way, that was like the first big hurdle. We also like have a bunch of different egress points in that garage that were added over the years just mm-hmm. to make it more convenient. That was kind of like the second big code thing. The mayor, because, you know, everyone was talking about that this was such a need, was willing to call a code, what's called like a code blue declaration. I'm sorry, an emergency declaration, which allowed us not to have to take a month and a half to get through zoning, and we could open very quickly.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because that would have been an obstacle.
Right.
I mean, a huge obstacle.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you never know. You do the inspection and you may find out that you've got work that's going to take weeks to schedule,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you can get willing helpers to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we virtually didn't have to do anything to the space.
Okay.
We had to put in just like regular smoke detectors.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the miracles I shared with you is that Peter Barber, who is on our SOWE board, and, you know, Two Dudes is like so active in the community. The Friday before we opened, he drove like the lift truck up from the Grice building where they were doing work, and his team put up
just
our smoke
drives
detectors.
It over and starts putting up smoke
detectors. Early,
yeah,
early, you know, the morning of November 1st.
All right. So if on the morning of November 1st, you were on King Street behind this really slow lift that was going somewhere, and you were like, why are these guys on the road? It's downtown Lancaster. You were behind a miracle. You were behind a miracle that was about to happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. We also had someone who had parked in our garage who thought they were going to hit the brake, but they hit the gas. So we had a huge hole punched in the side.
Yeah.
It was sort of like at one of the door entrances, but still something like very significant that needed to be fixed. At first, we weren't sure if it was like structural, which would have been like a lot more work. So I have a friend, Gary Weaver from Tibbetts Weaver, who serves on our lift loan committee. I said, hey, do you know anybody that could help us with this? He put me in touch with Peter Egan from CH&E. Mm-hmm. Peter is a wonderful guy, but very gruff. So I talked to him on the phone. He goes, I'll have somebody out there tomorrow. Like, okay, great. And he sent also like a structural engineer, happens to be my friend Roger, but I didn't know Roger worked there. Roger did his analysis, sent to the city. We were able to, CH&E fixed it for free within 3 days.
Mm.
Like, seriously, a hole punched in a brick wall.
And that was the door that ended up being the main entrance. Right,
yeah.
for those who are coming in for shelter.
In. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Let me see. Oh, you mentioned the high ceiling. So, when we first started exploring this, we were concerned about how we would heat it because it is such a large space with high ceilings. Talked to one expert person, I'm doing air quotes right now, who was like, you can never heat that space. It's like, forget it. Mm-hmm. I was like, sounds like a challenge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have friends at High Construction, that we've kind of worked with on advocacy efforts to build more affordable housing. Reached out to somebody I know from High. He's like, of course you can. We do it all the time. Here's the vendor list, you know. So happens that there's a vendor right down on Seymour Street that has this piece of equipment.
Really?
Yeah. And you've been in there in the mornings. It's toasty. It's like, warm. Especially when there were a lot of people in there. Like, there were times I was down to a t-shirt because it was so hot in there.
It was a very comfortable space. Yeah.
Yes.
It may not be the most efficient of heating situations, but it's
all.
Heatable.
Yes. Yeah. And it's because we had to have it at least like 60 degrees or something like that to meet code. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of like, for me, like, we, as a staff, as a board, decided we were going to do something and nothing was going to like deter us, you know? And I think with having that attitude, we just like pulled all the levers of people that we know that could help us. And they did. And then the big miracle was like, we needed $200,000. The backbone of the overnight was a security team, called Invictus Security. And they are wonderful. They are pros at de-escalation. They care about the folks that we serve. They're security, but they're also just very, friendly, mm-hmm. caring, you know, empathetic folks.
That was my experience with them.
Yeah, great. So that was the majority because it's like 12-hour shifts, you know, two people.
Overnight.
Linens and heating and all those things. We felt like we needed $200,000 to run it for a 12-week period. We raised that in under a week.
Really?
And it was a mix of large donors. We had one very large
Did you bring a list
donor.
Of contact numbers for me?
No. The folks who gave us a large donation called my development director, and she was like taking her husband to a doctor's appointment, had her dog in the car or something. She said she almost wrecked her car. But I mean, that was like day six.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
That put us over what we, the 200 that we felt like we needed to run it. We were going to open and figure it out, but that then allowed us to, like, that like line in Forrest Gump, and he's like, I don't have to worry about money anymore.
Yeah.
And now we could then really just focus on making it like the best it could possibly be. I'm trying to think, did I miss any miracles? Oh, on the Friday, November 1st, when that we were supposed to open then that Monday, the porta potties got delivered. Mm-hmm. And you've seen the space. We have that huge garage door.
Yeah.
But like a porta potty truck is big. Well, they by
it's
mistake.
High. It's very high.
Yeah.
With the porta potty on top of it, it's even higher.
They like hit the track of that main garage door, which we needed to be able to put up and down. Not their fault. Like Walters has been wonderful to work with, but the door wouldn't go down. And we had already had everything set up and we had like valuable things in there. We called right away to this like door company because there aren't that many door companies that handle those types of commercial doors. And the guy was like, oh, I just happened to be over on Mannheim Pike. I'll shoot right over there when I'm done here. Like that never happens. We've had times when that door has been out of service for a month, and the guy couldn't have been nicer. Like I remember thinking to myself, should I ask somebody else if they're seeing this person right now? Because like this just feels like something that, you know, was meant to be, because that would have been really, I'm not sure what we would have done if we couldn't have gotten the door down.
By definition, a miracle.
Yeah.
So how did the experience of recruiting volunteers go?
It was,
normally the hard part. Money's hard.
Yeah.
Building and grounds is hard.
Yeah.
But people, that's hardest.
Yeah.
How'd you do it? Because all I saw was like names filling that, like by the time I got to the sign up sheet, it was not all the way full, but it was darn near full. And it was like a week or two after.
We overthought it in the beginning.
Okay.
We tried to maybe like screen people who had experience with the population we were seeking to serve.
Sure.
So we put it out and then people would sort of express interest and put that experience down. And then we would sort of invite people to the sign up genius. And there were like, we invited people also to say like, oh, I'll help, you know, connect with, you know, potential donors, or I'll donate, you know, supplies. Like, it wasn't all just volunteers. People could sign up. But for the volunteer portion of it, we were at first thinking we needed to screen people. And we did do that. And we had a good amount of people that we first screened sign up, but it wasn't enough. So then we continued to push out the volunteer sign up, and didn't make sort of experience with that population a requirement.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's a little bit of a risk.
It is, but I think.
But you had security on site.
We did.
We have people in the unhoused population. They're adults. They know how to live, and for the most part, you know, that there's policing of yourself and stuff like that in line.
So
there's a lot of reassurance I found in this experience of folks generally just take care of things.
Yes. Yeah. And as long as you showed up with, like, sort of the attitude, like, I'm here to serve, even if I don't have experience with this population, I'm going to make eye contact and smile and be, you know, a friendly face, whether it's in the evening or in the morning, you know, and like the volunteer jobs in the evening were like, we had always like an staff person from Tenfold, just like a decision maker since it's our building.
Yes.
But in addition to that, I mean, we had, you know, outreach workers who are very familiar with the population. We had people that, you know, through from a faith perspective, just felt like it's the way that they wanted to serve, but they had no experience. In the mornings, mainly we were cleaning, you know, so you don't need a lot of expertise to do that. And really, you're not engaging that much. You're just literally cleaning up so the next night the team can welcome people in and they're ready to go. But, you would speak to people and try to, you know, kind of send them on their way with a smile and things like that. I mean, and I think what I realized through that process is, if we're truly going to get to the root of this issue, we can't, you know, we can't keep just expecting it to be people who have the right experience.
Right.
It's all of us.
Right.
And it doesn't, you don't need to have that experience.
Exactly.
You just need to come with the right, you know, in the right heart space to do the work. And I think it also helps change perceptions that people that don't work with this population have, and can be influential in sharing, you know, like, hey, like, there are a lot of people there that actually were working, just needed a place to sleep. You know, it's not, you know, maybe the perception that it's people that are young, like in their 20s, maybe with substance abuse. There are a lot of older people there. I mean, Chris, you saw it. I mean, we had people in wheelchairs. A lot of people will use walkers, you know, canes, crutches, you know, a lot of older people. Who just don't have, you know, a safety net and don't have a network of friends and family that they can depend on, you know, and that's why they're homeless. So I think I am so glad that we didn't just say like, oh, you have to have experience with this population and stick to that. I'm so glad we opened it up, because I think it made the experience so much better for the community. And I think that's how we're going to change things.
Absolutely.
And the original question, like, we had an overwhelming response. We had like over 200 people sign up immediately to either volunteer, donate, or help raise money, you know, through their church connections and things like that. And then as time went on, I think we had over 118 like unique volunteers who did at least one shift, AM, PM, but most people did multiple shifts. I forget how many hours that was in the final report. I think I put a number of hours just based on shifts and days we were open and things like that. It was incredible. And we actually did a pulse survey with our staff too, just to say, you know, how did this impact your work? You know, are you glad that we did this? You know, and overwhelmingly positive response from our staff too.
It was
about why we did it.
It felt very much like a bright light. In my experience, it felt very much like a bright light. Showing up, it was a bright light. People coming in the shelter, it's a bright light. So, you guys are reopening? Okay, so tell me about that.
Yeah, so when the code blue in January hit, which was right around MLK weekend, we knowing that that was coming, we partnered with Anchor Lancaster. They do the day center. They do the feeding program, laundry, showers at First United Methodist.
Right.
But it's a separate organization from First United Methodist, right, called
It
Anchor.
Is now.
Yeah,
it is now.
Yeah. It is now. Correct. And then they have a large space for the breakfast program, but then they, because the church just has so many great things happening there, they don't have that space for day center. They have a smaller room. So they serve about 40 to 50 a day, but people are kind of having to cycle through. Mm. And because it was going to be so cold and we were still set up from shelter, we said, you know, hey, do you want to bring it here? Because then they could serve more people. Mm. So they've actually been with us. They've been providing day shelter since that cold snap in January.
Right.
But we're already set up. They've been there. So the heat's been on. So we could quickly mobilize. We just had to line up security, you know, and make sure, you know, we have like linen service and things like that. But it makes it pretty easy for us to turn on. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do that starting Monday through Friday evenings. You know, they'll be exit will be 8 a.m. on Saturday, and then Code Blue is ending at that point.
Okay.
The weather's supposed to improve. So.
All right. So looking a little further in the future, just a little further mm-hmm. in the future, what kinds of miracles are you looking for? What kinds of things are you looking for to happen?
I think figuring out how we can use this and our volunteers to really, as a community, wrap our arms around this issue. Like I put in the final report, I think functional zero is possible.
Mm.
I really do. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at the stats, only 21% of the folks are considered chronically homeless. So like have been repeatedly in the system mm-hmm. in the last 2 years. Over half the people that stayed with us stayed 7 days or less, so needed a very short-term solution. And imagine like if we can wrap our arms around that specific population, keep them out of homelessness.
Right, on the front end.
Yes, yeah. Because it's so much harder to escape it once you're
right.
in it right. for a certain period of time. I feel like the biggest need is really affordable rental units.
And I think if... Correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand Tenfold's mission more on the front end mm-hmm. than on the back end.
Historically, it's credit counseling to help,
right. you know, mm-hmm. finding ways to get people into homes that they can afford.
Right.
Affordable or transitional housing. Like, is that right?
Yeah, it okay. is. Yeah. And we have over 100 like scattered site units that we provide case management services for people that are, you know, have high barriers to stable housing. Ensuring that they stay housed and don't fall into homelessness. So, like you said, it's sort of more of an upstream approach generally.
Yeah.
So we do have some expertise in figuring out how to do that. You know, and then like looking a ways out, then hopefully the low barrier shelter and, you know, partners like Water Street are mm-hmm. for people who really do need or have high, you know, vulnerability and high barriers. Mm-hmm. And how can we, you know, really like hopefully between Clay Street and, you know, mainly Water Street and some of the other ones, we can serve most people there.
Right.
But move people through a continuum into stability.
Right.
You know, it would be overwhelming, I think, if we were somewhere like Philadelphia. But here, you know, and knowing how many people reached out to your earlier point about our success with volunteers who were willing to get involved in this issue. And then the other thing has been St. Joseph's Church, Crossroads Church. There have been some other folks who, like, just by us asking during Code Blue, have opened up warming centers,
which is,
to me, a fantastic thing. The Parish Resource Center, Kate Good, was a huge help to us in just kind of, you know, doing outreach throughout the county and things like that. I feel like if we can make it something that people aren't like, oh, my tax dollars take care of that. Somebody else is taking care of that, and we can like make it simple, defined, and, you know, rewarding for people to get involved, I think they will.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we really like ultimately as a community can get to functional zero. And we're already there with veterans. Like, we have enough resources where if you're a veteran and you're homeless, if you raise your hand. Yeah, we have enough beds for that.
Yeah.
You know? So I think there's a real opportunity for us as a community to figure this out. Because I think part of, you know, when I was with Lancaster City Alliance and working on downtown revitalization, which was so fun, I loved that work, but I saw housing as sort of the next big thing. And that's why I, you know, shifted to that. But it's like so hard to enjoy the success in a downtown area when there are people that are your neighbors
that are struggling.
Right. You know, so I think we're all in this together and everything kind of works together for good or not, or they're going to be in conflict, you know? So I would love to see our downtown continue to thrive. I'd love to see more small businesses. I'd love to see, you know, people be successful. But I think, you know, we need to take care of the people who are here as well. So.
Right. Very good. Well, thank you so much for coming and speaking with us. Really appreciate it. And the opportunities that Tenfold has provided have been, for me, wonderful. And I know for those who are receiving that care, it is wonderful as well. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Glad you tuned in today. We look forward to chatting again in the next episode of Hey Hey, Anybody Listening?
Beautiful.